Welcome to the Dead Pixel Society podcast, the photo imaging industry's leading news source. Here's your host, Gary Peugeot.
The Dead Pixel Society podcast is brought to you by Media Clip, Advertech Printing, and Independent Photo Imagers.
Hello again and welcome to the Dead Pixel Society podcast. I'm your host, Gary Peugeot, and today we're joined by Emma Alexander, the co-founder of Wizern and Mother Brand, which sounds to me like either a breakfast cereal or a self-help guru. So we're going to find out what that is. And she's coming to us from the UK today. Hi, Emma. How are you today?
Hi, Gary. I'm great. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
So how did you get into the breakfast cereal business? Or am I... I'm just joking. Mother Brand is not a breakfast cereal, as far as I know. But so tell me the Emma Alexander story, because you started out as a commercial photographer and you grew from there. So talk about that journey.
Absolutely. I went to university. I did a photography degree. And then I really realized at the end, this is not what I want to do.
And how long did that take?
It was probably in my final year. But, you know, I left and I kind of tried to dip my toe and did a bit of freelancing. And I just knew my heart wasn't in it. I knew that the people around me who were working, you know, they really wanted it. They wanted it so badly. And they were making these opportunities happen to them. And it was really disarming to have put so long and so much money into this career.
Why did you choose that to begin with? Was this something you kind of saw on TV and thought, ooh, that sounds cool? Or what got you interested in the first place?
No, not at all. I had a place at uni to go and do sociology and anthropology. And I had a year out to do work with the European Voluntary Service. I was big, you know, volunteer in my teens. And the program I was due to work with fell away. And I basically blagged my way onto an art course, a foundation course, to fill the year. And I fell in love with photography as a medium. I just thought, God, this is amazing. I love it. Absolutely love it. And I worked so hard to get into, you know, one of the great universities in the UK. And then I don't know, through the academia, whatever it was, I sort of thought I love all the things around it, but the pressing the button is not what drives me. I love talking about it. And I think actually it kind of makes sense now, ending up as a producer. It totally makes sense. But I loved looking at work. I loved talking about work. I loved kind of beers at the end of the day, pictures all over the living room floor, going through it together and critiquing it. But actually, the actual act of shooting didn't fulfill me in the same way that I thought it would.
Mm-hmm. So it's almost like you appreciated the process, but you didn't really have a vision you were trying to communicate.
Yeah. And I still do. Like, I still love photography. I still, you know, absolutely live and breathe it. And I think, you know, when I started getting into consulting, having been through that process was really important to understand what drives people to make work was really important. But for me, it was actually the production side, the organization, the logistics, the planning. That's what I find really exciting and rewarding. Mm-hmm. And then obviously, as I've gone on in my career, being able to help other people to grow their careers, going back to that foundation of kind of volunteering back when I was a teen, it's something that really, really I find so rewarding. You know, I'm a natural mentor. Mm-hmm. I really want to help other people to grow. So kind of it's taken a long time to realize what facets of my personality, but also my, my skills, my natural skills and experience of how you can make that into your ideal career. Mm-hmm. I've had a really wiggly career working in kind of all kinds of places.
So it sounds to me like you're almost like it's one of those things where, you know, there's folks who are passionate about a sport. We'll say football, but not everyone is cut out to play. Some people are cut out to be a coach. And that seems to be like that was your experience. So from there, you know, you kind of reach a point in your education where it's like, wow, do I want to do this? So then what do?
I started working in syndication, in licensing. And this is back in, you know, early 2000s when licensing was still a thing, when it was still a viable income for people.
So by licensing, you mean stock photography?
Yes.
So were you taking it or working in the field?
Working in the agencies, I was an editor and I worked on the international desk. So we would pull in, you know, work from overseas and relicense that in the UK. And then we had a whole stock of amazing creators in the UK that we would then push out for feature stories and things. And we worked with celebrities. I mean, this is back when you get thousands and thousands of pounds for cover. And when, you know, it was a really viable way for photographers to make additional revenue. I mean, we used to have the stacks, the rolling stacks, and you'd go and kind of make copies of the transparencies that came in. I started as a scanner and a retoucher. So I sat in a dark. I know. I'm really showing my age now. I sat in a dark air conditioned room with a load of burly men and used to go and kind of drink 3 pints at lunchtime and then come back and try and focus my scanner. You have like 2 or 3 scanners running at once, and you would just feed in across all these machines and just do cleanup. Like that one's scanning, that one's cleaning up, that's scanning. It's crazy, crazy logistical nightmare. Obviously, that's all changed now. I came in just at the advent of when digital was really becoming popular, sort of 2003, 2004, and really overtaking it. And we were working hard to really digitize a lot of the kind of, you know, analog.
Yeah, people well, yeah, the archive, right? Yeah. I mean, because I imagine this company had a huge archive, not only the new stuff coming in of
millions.
I don't know who a 2003 millions. Celebrity would be, but the royal family or somebody at some point.
Well, we used to work for like Madonna and, you know, Kylie and all your kind of A-listers and stuff. We looked over archives as well, like Herb Ritz and Helmut Newton and kind of Lord Snowden.
That must have been really cool. Those transparencies. I mean, even though they're probably dupes, I'm sure it was a lover of the medium, you must have just been like salivating while looking at those.
It's incredible. I loved music, you know, and I go and I place a lot. I worked with a lot of music magazines and I placed a lot of, covers on book covers. And actually, some of them are still in circulation now. I found one in my local library and I was like, I made this happen. I think that kind of that satisfaction is probably what probably defines a producer. I think, you know, it's not, you didn't shoot the thing, you didn't shoot the picture. You're not the artist in the picture. You know, I didn't write the book, but I took all those three things and I brought it together. And I essentially made this happy melting pot where I had a really big hand in making that happen. And that's really satisfying for me.
Because if it wasn't for you, they would just be three different things, you know, out in the ether somewhere. But so that's awesome. So you were at this agency for a period. So what happens? Did you then strike out on your own, or what was the thought process there?
No, I was headhunted to go and set up a women's interest division of a particular studio. Mm-hmm. And then I moved to Australia. I did that for a bit. That was great. Then I moved to Australia with my then boyfriend, now husband. Mm-hmm. And we moved to Melbourne in South Australia. And, you know, a lot of the publishing ran out of Sydney, a lot of the big companies. So I was kind of adrift for a bit again. And I fell into advertising ad agencies. And I worked at one of the big up and coming ad agencies as a creative services manager. So I ran the creative floor, but I was also the point of contact for all the photographers coming in and all their agents. And then when we moved back to the UK, it was, you know, natural for me to go back into that. And I fell into production arm of advertising. So I worked as an art buyer, doing negotiations, meeting all the photographers, helping to, you know, refine and shortlist and cost up, and then produce all the commercial advertising shoots for our big clients.
At some point you say, I can do this on my own, right? So
yeah.
And so which came first, the production company, mother brand, or the creative consultant agency, Wiser? And which one came first?
So mother brand came first. I have a story pretty typical for a lot of women, a lot of mothers in the creative industry. So I had a baby. I went back and was had a disappointing return to work experience, which meant I was basically screwed over by the ad agency. So I left, went to another agency, you know, better deal, bigger clients, bigger promotion, blah, 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 blah. Had a baby there, got royally done over by these guys. So essentially, you know, 2 weeks before I was due back in the office, they're like, oh, we haven't got a job for you. I'm like, I think that's illegal, but okay. So we quietly agreed that I would be made redundant, i.e. paid to go away. And I was left in this position where, you know, I had a little bit of payout, a little bit of redundancy money, and no plan, basically. And my husband infuriatingly just kept saying to me, why wouldn't you, you know, you love production, you're not doing enough of the doing, because advertising, you know, you spend so much time project managing, like doing the trafficking, and there's more kind of that boring admin stuff. And he's like, you're not doing enough doing. Why wouldn't you just do what you love? And I was terrified. I got to be clear, never ever wanted to be my own boss. I never wanted to run my own business.
Right.
I never wanted to hustle for clients. I loved the man. Oh, I loved working for the man. I loved getting paid. I loved getting my paltry kind of holiday allowance. I knew exactly where I was. It was great. I did not want to rock the boat by going freelance. And I was so scared. And he kept saying, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you? And I was like, oh, shut up. There's no reason why I wouldn't try this. And it terrifies me. But I did. And obviously it was amazing. It was the best, you know, decision ever. But yeah, I really was pushed into it by that experience with my employees, with my ad agency. And then, you know, quite heavy-handedly by my husband going, I don't understand. I've always worked for myself. It's amazing.
Everyone's cut out for it, right? I mean, that's the thing is people who are wired like that sometimes have trouble, you know, relating to people who are more reluctant or more risk averse, right? I'm wired more that way myself. And so I totally get where you're coming from. It's like, I really like a steady paycheck. I really like, you know, having them worry about client acquisition. I just come and do the thing, right? I totally see that. You and I are like, you know, but on the other hand, you know, what does your husband do? What is his career?
He works in design and technology. So
okay,
he's always kind of worked for himself, and he's been the last 10 years. He co-founded a co-working space or flexible office space. Sorry, provider.
Okay,
like another one we don't talk about. we don't talk about that.
Yeah, we don't talk about that other company. Yeah. So anyway, I can certainly see where, you know, his encouragement would create that. So what is sort of the mother brand ethos, right? What do you bring to the table for that may make you stand out?
Well, I knew from working with advertising agencies, I didn't want to work with advertising agencies. Essentially, I'd seen the attitude, you know, people on a Friday getting a call from the client and going, oh, we changed everything. We changed everything. Have a new option to us by Monday. You're the last person on the end of the stick, you know, the pointy end of the stick. So I didn't really want to do that. I couldn't see how I could fit this around my business. And also we created Mother Brand to fit around my children as well. I had a really young family. My husband was in a startup or a scaling business. They went through a couple of rounds of investment. So, you know, they were in a big scaling business globally. And, you know, there wasn't time for me to be in that kind of business where I had to be everybody's kind of dog, I suppose, at the end of the thing. And I thought, I don't want this. I don't want to be in this. And it actually took a long time for me it took a year for me to find my space. Mm-hmm. But I remember having an epiphany moment. I thought, what do I stand for here? And I really had to go back to my values. And this is something I say to people a lot when you think about you're running a business, but so often creatives don't always run a business like a business.
Exactly.
We could come on to that.
And that is what we're really going to talk about in a few minutes.
Yeah. But, you know, we one of the things I love kind of saying to people is, you know, what is your mission, your vision, and your values? You know, it's not just for big business to understand your mission, your vision, and your values.
Right.
You can talk about it as being, you know, finding your why, you know, that Simon Sinek book and a really, really famous idea of finding your purpose, however you phrase it. But I think it's so important to know why you're doing what you're doing. And it's you know, if it's for a paycheck, well, you know, maybe it's not the right thing. But
right.
For me, it was all about, what do I want? Well, I want to support creatives to grow. And I realized that the people I was working with most and the people I cared about the most were unrepresented artists. So people without agents, because agents typically have a production arm. They will take care of that themselves. But actually what I love working with is people who don't have agents. Either they don't want one, they've had one, they don't need one anymore. They have enough clients, they don't need one. or they just, you know, can't find one right now.
Right.
Whatever reason. But you know, they go and do their own marketing, they pitch for their own business, but they just need ad hoc support to deliver on those really big commercial campaigns. So, you know, most campaigns, you get a call, fine, I can fulfill that, that's fine. But what are the big ones coming? The ones that need you know, logistics, overseas things, permits, licensing, you know, unique spaces. I've had to find kind of all kinds of crazy spaces before. Shoot, like last year, you know, we licensed the space outside Tower Bridge. You know, we do all these kind of wonderful things. When you need that kind of really specialist support and also the person to be the middleman between someone like a client or an ad agency to come in and be that person intermediary, that's when I can provide real value to people who are.
So here's a question I would have, right? I would look at that, and as someone who's had my own consultancy thing, or whatever, I say, so how do you figure out what to charge?
Well, that's the $64,000 question, isn't it?
Exactly. Because my guess, I'm just assuming from, you know, us having a conversation here and me getting to know you a little bit, you probably undervalued what you did, not because you're trying to lowball anybody, but because you're a modest person with, you know, sort of a reasonable outlook on life. Was that correct?
Yes and no. I mean, I've spent years in ad agencies handling quotes. You know, so we triple bid, 4 or 5 times bid every job we do. Mm-hmm. So I've seen a real wide gamut of what people charge. Yeah. And that was a really interesting thing when I started going into this. And I thought, you know, my skills and experience as an art buyer and then also on the production side is actually really unique and valuable. So I understand what people are looking for and also what they're willing to pay. Mm-hmm. So part of the guidance, which ended up turning into Wiseman, was also, I think creatives are undervaluing themselves.
Right. That's kind of my point.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I thought you meant me as a production company. I was like,
no, I'm talking about you coming from a creative bent.
Yeah. I think there's always fear, you know, and I think that's one of the wonderful things that one of the reasons that drove us to start Wiseman is this idea that so much of what we do, I talk about this a lot, but this idea of isolation. I think that isolation is probably one of the biggest challenges that creatives face, you know, creative business owners face. Collaboratively, photographers, filmmakers, you know, what we do, executionally, it's really collaborative. You know, we all get together and it can be like 30 people on a shoot, you know, 100 people on a film set, but then you go home and the day-to-day of what you do is basically on your own. Sometimes you might have a studio, you might have a small team, you might go into the desk, you know, to the office, but typically a lot of the freelancers I speak to, or small or micro businesses, by which I mean like under 10, a lot of them are remote. A lot of them, especially post-COVID, are working remotely. They may have a co-working space they share, but a lot of what we do is kind of on our own.
Sure.
And I think that's incredibly disorientating. How do you benchmark and sense check what you are charging, as to your point, how to charge usage, whether or not to bundle in kit or not, all these different things, even through to, you know, suppliers. I work a lot with post-production houses, and we have a lovely client who's a sound designer at the moment, and we're working through with them the rebrand, and we're kind of trying to reposition them in their space and trying to, you know, understand where they fit. You know, it's very hard to do that on your own. I think we really underestimate whether it's as a business owner or as a freelancer. And those two, you know, they are different. Running a business is definitely different to being a freelancer. We definitely underestimate what goes into starting and, more importantly, growing a small business. You know, you have to be, even if you're in a team of, say, you know, 2 or 3, you have to be, you know, social media manager, you have to be marketing director, you have to be finance director, you've got to do all these different jobs and then actually do the craft and then physically do the craft that you're there for. You know, it's really difficult. And I think, you know, needing that sense of needing somebody on tap, you know, I think tech's bringing us closer together, but it's also, you know, making us feel further apart in some ways. Wiseman basically grew up exactly that reason, when you just need to call somebody. And just for context, sorry, Wiseman is a consultancy platform. So we have a pool of industry experts. It is live. It is one-to-one. It's always personal. You know, it's your questions answered in real time is what we really say. Mm-hmm. It's not delving through a 12-part course or having to go through Google for kind of anonymous advice. I think that human connection is what really drives us forward as humans, but also as business owners. Yeah.
So how long have you been operating the Mother Brand business?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Photo retailers, energize your sales with ShareMe Chat, the proven texting platform. Using chat to text on your website keeps your customers connected and buying. See us at Pro and IPI to find out why dealers using ShareMe Chat close more sales without adding staff. Find out more at shareme.chat.
That has been, I think it's 6 years now. Six, 7 years.
And then how long were you in that process before you decided that, hey, we want to do the Wiseearn thing?
Wiseearn's been operating for about, this will be our 3 years now. And it really came out of the pandemic.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Did you actually launch it before COVID or during COVID?
No, well, it evolved naturally out of COVID. We, during that period, you know, I knew that photographers were adrift. A lot of my contacts, you know, are photographers. So I started running accountability sprints using, you know, agile methodology as a base, getting people together in these 2 week sprints, in little cohorts, you know, to try and keep people motivated, to give them a support network, and obviously to essentially to mentor them through using this period of downtime for personal, professional reflection and growth. Mm-hmm. I was running those for a long time and they were amazing. They gave me a really good insight into, obviously there were kind of lots of people came and worked with me one-to-one in a mentorship capacity, paid mentorship. But it also gave me real access to what the problems that people were facing.
Right.
And so many of those problems were the same, you know? And then I realized as well that, gosh, I'm not best placed to answer all these questions, but I know, you know, I got this amazing like contacts book for 20 years, you know, it's not me, but I know who I should be speaking to. So it became a real no-brainer to go, oh, no, I'm going to put you in touch with the best person for this to work with.
Right.
So then it grew and it grew and it grew out of that. And then suddenly we thought, this is not a standalone, you know, this isn't an arm of Mother Brand anymore. This is actually a standalone product, mm-hmm. and it deserves to be its own business. So now it stands as its own business.
And where
where
did the name come from?
Wiseearn. Gosh, I don't know. So my husband is also my co-founder. He left his own startup of 10 years, 2 years ago to come and co-found and grow Wiseearn with me as a standalone business. He came up with, this is a really good example of why it's good to share and why it's good to bounce ideas off people. So he kind of burst in one day and said, I've got this great logo I've designed. It's amazing. He's a designer. And I've got this name. It's Wiseearn. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, Wiseearn means like, shriveled. What's like to be like a wizened old man is like a shriveled old man sort of thing. And he was like, oh no, that doesn't work. And he's like, my logo looks amazing. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry, babe, it can't be. It really can't be. So yeah, rule number one, share. Don't sit on the share ideas. Collaboration and growth comes through sharing. And you won't end up with a weird name. Yeah, then he kind of went back to the drawing board and he was like, what about Wiseearn? How does that sit? And we kind of, and we were like, yeah, Wiseearn, let's go with it. And then we actually bought our logo. We went to Behance and we found an amazing artist on there. And it's kind of the ethos of sharing and supporting the community. We're like, we could design our own logo, but we're just going to buy one. So we found someone who had this really great series of birds. And we're like, yeah. And that was a great email for him to wake up to. He was also in the States. Can we buy your logo? And he was like, yes.
$1,000.
I was like, there you go. He's like, oh my God, you blew my mind. So that was great.
So there's been an explosion, I think, and I don't know if it's a COVID thing or a technology thing, because technology makes creating so much easier now. Maybe not easier, but more accessible. Maybe that's the better word. There's a bigger interest then in creative opportunities, right? Because you have, you know, social media influencers and, you know, all this is, but it's still a business. So when you're talking to clients, do you find now that they're more business people who want to do creative stuff, or the creative people want to do businessy stuff?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think the majority of our clients are existing creators. So Wiseearn is very much for professional creatives. And I think that's a really interesting space to be in right now, because you have an awful lot of information and kind of, I don't know, like support out there for entry level, you know, new creatives, young creatives entering the market, because young and new creatives aren't always young creatives.
Right.
You know, people entering the market, there is a lot of support and kind of information out there for them. But what do you do when you've been in this business for 20, 30 years and you feel like perhaps you need to level up? So actually there's two real distinct customers that we have typically. One is, you know, creatives who have, say they're working with big brands, they're working with the Nikes, the Adidas, you know, the Lululemons, but they're doing their kind of social media campaigns, or they're like, I am ready to go up. I'm ready to get those big ad campaigns. We're so ready to get that level, but I don't know how to do it. How do I permeate that above the line advertising campaigns? How do I do that? So there's that step up for them, people leveling up. And the other really interesting band of customers who've come is people who have been in the business, like I say, for a long time. They are maybe in their late 40s, maybe 50s, sometimes their 60s. And they're like, I've got another 10 years or so before I retire. But I feel like either my work is not relevant anymore. How do I reposition myself to appeal to a broader thing, level of clients? Or I've been doing this thing for so long. How do I repivot and find the love again? How do I reignite my love and drive for this? Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, also I had a great conversation with someone a couple of months ago. It was like, I've got 10 years left. I want to make it my best 10 years. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing okay, but I want to smash it out of the park. I want to start doing things that I, you know, getting those things I always dreamed of, but I always thought, oh, they'll come one day, or I don't know how to.
Right.
I don't care anymore. I've got nothing to be scared of anymore. Let's go and, you know, let's go and shake some trees and do something radical. I'm like, that's amazing. Let's go. So, you know, it's really interesting space. I guess when you're a CEO, you're at the top of the tree, who do you talk to? There's a vulnerability in putting out on LinkedIn, like, oh, I've got no clients, you know, this week. Can anyone help me? There's a point where you can do that, but there's a point where you're so senior in your field that actually it's disarming to have that experience, and it's very vulnerable to share that. So who do you share that with? Mm-hmm. And this provides a
confidential. I'm going to call Emma for that.
Absolutely. Too right. Well, we have clients from all over the world. We work with a ton of people from the States. We have customers coming from, you know, Canada, all across Europe. And I think, like you say, the technology now and the normalization of video conferencing just means that it's not a big deal to jump on a call with somebody in a different time zone and get really amazing advice from someone, you know, from an industry expert. It's complete no-brainer.
So if you've been around in business for a while, there tends to be sort of norms, like things that people always kind of fall back on, right? You know, the show up on time, be polite, don't talk politics, or, you know, whatever the normal things, but it always seems like there's always like a trend that burbles up that people like try to throw in there. No, this is the new way. This is the new way. How do you manage that? Right. Where you may have a client you're working with and you're trying to coach them on in a certain, you know, hey, you need to pick this up, or you need to look at it this way. But they're coming at you with, you know, this stupid thing they read online.
Oh, it's hard. I mean, it's delicate working consultancy. You know, it's a blend of, I would say it's kind of weird for us. It's a blend of kind of mentoring and coaching and consultancy. It's a real blend of those two, because you've got to be mindful. This is people's careers. You know, this is their passion. This is their baby. You know, it's hard to be brutal with creatives, because so much of yourself is in what you create sometimes. I think it's really, you know, for me, we've got five core principles that we take it back to. And I think it's almost like a linear kind of journey for me in some ways.
Progression.
Exactly. We call it the five P's, and they are planning, pricing, portfolio, pitching, and promotion. Mm-hmm. So planning, number one, strategy, 100%. So many people I speak to do not have a strategy, and that's, you know, can feel very buzzwordy. Big business has a strategy. Everyone has a strategy. It's your North Star. It's just a plan.
Right.
You know, that's all it is. And you know, it's different to a goal. When you go to the Olympics, everyone's got the same goal, which is to win gold, but it's their strategy that changes how they get there. And I think you can write a strategy on a tiny, I would say back of a fag packet, a back of an envelope, you know, you can write a strategy, but you have to have that before you do anything, because otherwise you're just throwing things out there and hoping that something will stick.
Right.
Strategy number one, then it is, then it's portfolio for us when you're talking with creatives, but it's the same with any business. your outward facing comms, you know, you're
even if you're in sales, right? I mean, maybe you're not even a creative person, but you're in sales. You got to be able to show what you've already done.
Yes. And before that, does that body of work talk to the strategy that you have put down? You know, do you want to reach a certain type of customer, whether in sales, whether you're a small business, whether you're a creative, you have a customer and you know, you've got to know who that is. And then you've got to really edit that portfolio to speak to your ideal customer. Show them that you're giving a solution to their problem. Everyone has a problem, right? Every client has a problem and you are giving that solution.
Sure.
So you're going to make sure, one, you have a strategy, you know what you want. Two, your outward facing comms, everything you have is actually speaking to that problem and to your ideal customer. Then it's pricing. You know, are you pricing your work correctly? Is it too high? Is it too low? And I'll tell you now, you know, in advertising, absolutely, we would overlook people who undercharge themselves because we thought, you don't really have a grasp of how important this is. You're selling yourself short. I don't think they get it. They don't, you know. So absolutely, be bold. You can always go down the pricing. And then pitching and promotion. So pitching, of course, pitching for new work. Well, if you've got a strategy, if you know who you're talking to, if you had a body of work that actually speaks to that person, whether that is social proof for sales or whether it's, you know, a portfolio, then the pitching becomes essentially easy because you know who you're speaking to, your tone of voice is right, and you're providing them a
solution. These things kind of build on each other where, you know, once you know one, the next one should become easier. So it should be getting easier as you progress, I would think.
Absolutely. And then the promotion becomes a no-brainer because you've already got the examples of what you've done. You know who you're talking to, you know what the message is, it becomes, and then the confidence is there as well. And I tell you, mindset is probably half of the blockers that we see with people, you know, pushing themselves forward and seeking growth. You know, that fear, that horrible voice inside your head, and it's hard to squash the voice. But you know what? Sometimes just speaking to other people, I mean, your network, can't say enough how much I think your network is so important.
Right.
Having people you trust, people you can share work with, but people who push, you know, lift you up as well.
Sure.
And give you that confidence boost.
Wow. You've given me a lot to think about in my own life now. I got to go sit down with an envelope and start writing down some stuff.
You do. You don't have your strategy for this year. I'm going to give you a slap on the wrist, young man.
Okay. So Emma, if people want to learn more about your two businesses or even your husband's co-working space, I don't know, where can people go for more information?
Well, you know, wisern.com is where to start. W-I-S-E-R-N, wisern.com. We have a ton of amazing experts on there, from pricing experts to strategists, you know, portfolio reviews, the works. That is a good place to start. And obviously Instagram, it's wisern.me. And then Mother Brand, you know, for production, is it motherbrand.com? That's B-R-A-N, like the brand flakes, like you say, motherbrand.com, and at Mother Brand on Insta as well.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Emma, for your time and for your sharing. It's been great to talk to you, and hope to we'll see you again soon.
Thank you for having me. It's been wonderful.
Thank you for listening to the Dead Pixel Society podcast. Read more great stories and sign up for the newsletter at www.thedeadpixelssociety.com.